This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1088, and it's the Relevant Podcast here in Virginia Beach. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Virginia Beach is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What up, Dome?
And just down the road there in Nashville, our very own downtown, Emily Brown.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, if I sound different, it's because I forgot all of my podcast recording gear, and we were going through Jesse's junk in the attic, and I have some 2003 setup, so I apologize, dear listener.
I have a little exhibit to podcasting of yesteryear in my attic, shrine, that I call it. I often go in some mirror so I can just look at myself with old podcast gear and just, you know, look back on memories. Thankfully, Cameron's able to pillage them.
The Museum of Podcasting History. I'm up here in Virginia. Cohen and I road tripped up like we did last summer, and we're staying with the Carries for a few days and see all the Virginia highlights, which there's three. Yeah. I'm kidding. I don't know. Virginia Beach is cool. Cool town.
We went on a lovely walk last evening after you guys arrived.
That sounds like such a cute little grandparent thing to do.
It was nice. It was nice. Well, lovely. To be fair, we did have a nice sit down dinner. Mm-hmm. Cameron commented, he's like, "This looks like a holiday dinner."
It was rotisserie. There was mashed potatoes. I don't eat that.
You just pulled out all the stops for you.
Southern hospitality. Not only that, we got back from a walk and we sat outside. We sat at the tiki bar for a little bit. Cameron mm-hmm. got to experience that before some rain blew in. And then it was late. Cameron and Cohen have been on the road all day, and so we decided to fire up some Shark Week. As you guys know, this week is one of what I consider was once one of the great American institutions.
Absolutely. July 4th hot dog eating contest. Shark Week.
Exactly.
Joey Chestnuts. Yeah.
I've been boycotting Shark Week for several years, ever since I feel like they, no pun intended, jumped the shark by doing fake specials. But this year, we were on my couch last night, my family, Cameron and Cohen, and we're scrolling the latest Shark Week offerings. And we're like, okay, enough time. Longtime listeners of this podcast know that the Megalodon special, which was a fake shark special, it was basically a mockumentary that they played off as a real documentary. It soured me on Shark Week for a long time. But it's like, all right, look at these interesting titles. Air Jaws, okay?
Air Jaws.
And the premise of this special is they reestablish the premise for the entirety of the episode. It is basically the same 10 minutes on a loop in different scenes, but it's two guys who for some reason do not get along. It's never clearly established why they don't like each other. We don't know their credentials. We don't know if they're marine biologists. We know almost nothing
about
these. I did not
get accomplished scientist vibes from either of them.
Let's get it.
Their stated goal was to capture what they call breaches, which is the entire premise of this special is, can they drag a fake seal behind a boat and fake sharks into jumping out of the water and doing cool flips? That is the entire premise of the show.
Yeah. pressure for an hour.
And they tell us repeatedly that they're going to, and that it's been hard to get breaches lately because the orcas are hunting the sharks. Again, they didn't give us no stats to back this up. We never see orcas hunting sharks.
But there was B-roll footage of dead sharks washed up on the shore that we saw the same footage 38 times. Yeah.
And again, it didn't take us long to sniff out. Well, the reason we're not seeing many breaches this year on Air Jaws is because it's not because of the orcas. Do not blame the orcas for this. They're just not good. At one point, they've run out of stuff to do. They've been circling this island, dragging the seal, it's getting true. Zero breaches. And we're like 40 minutes in.
It's true.
We're like 40. So then they find a fishing vessel that is just, you know, and for some reason they board this vessel. And it looks like some destitute old pirate has been living on this vessel for the last 30 years. All he goes by is Fluff. It appears he's not even consenting to being on television. He doesn't appear to have any idea what's going on. And they try to ask him if he's ever seen a breach so that they can ascertain if they're going to get one on the special. And he said he saw a shark pull a bird out of the sky one time. Like, but we got the impression that was quite a bit of time ago. We bailed on the special without one breach. My son, no breach. It was way past his bedtime. And I see he ran. I don't know if you realize this, Cameron. I think you had gone in the kitchen. Noah ran back out of his room, was hiding behind the couch. I was like, "What are you doing? You got to go to bed." He's like, "We didn't see the breach."
I'm like, I can't believe they didn't have one
Welcome
breach.
To Shark Week, son. That's insane. Welcome like, to Shark Week.
Nothing this but build-up and disappointment. Yeah.
They played the same breach from last year in slow-mo five times to let us know
it's
what
possible.
A good breach
I'll
looks
be honest,
like.
When yeah. you started talking, when you said the word air jaws, I was thinking they were going to go almost like a Sharknado route where they just like completely fabricate a totally unreal shark story. I thought it was going to be like the sea version of Air Bud where there was a shark who did sports tricks or something like that.
The breach is kind of a sports trick.
Derek, what's your experience or any, do you have any experience with Shark Week?
I don't have any experience with Shark Week. My oldest son loves, I mean, he's been hype about Shark Week all week and he hasn't slowed down to watch one thing. So this is not a tradition at our home.
You're not missing out.
But let me tell you this.
Sounds like I missed out on the heyday
when you're
Shark
on,
Week.
So now you're on Max and all the Shark Week programs are just there. You know, you don't have to wait each evening. You know, it's just so you can just pick what you want. So we're going through all of them. And after Air Jaws was so disappointing, we're like, we need to switch this up.
Yeah.
Because...
Air Jaws is killing me right now.
Of them are the same thing. They're all the same thing. It's all this buildup. It's all this repeating the same footage again and again and again to this one quest that ultimately turns out to be disappointing almost always, right?
Yeah.
We saw Jackass does Shark Week. And we're like,
oh yeah,
let's check this out.
Now that's content I could get behind.
Jesse,
right
tell
there,
them
bro.
About that show. Because it is honestly what you hope Shark Week is. It was the best show ever.
It really was. And Cameron, I did some research last night because we watched the one from 2021. They have a sequel in 2022.
I know, I saw it. It was up next. We're going to watch it tonight.
We're firing that up tonight. But it's the crew from Jackass with some of the new recruits. So they have like Jasper from the Odd Future crew is part of the gang now. This other guy who it's unclear what his origin story is, how he ensconced himself with the Jackass crew, but his name's Poopsies.
He willingly goes by the name
Poopsies. That's even better.
Poopies. He does. Well, he's going by the name. I don't know if he's willing or not, but that's what everyone's calling him. But him and Jasper from Odd Future are the new guys on the crew. The Jackass guys are looking very old, okay? They're not looking... The years have caught up with them.
It's because they
and
are
And they've
old.
Lived a lot of life.
They've aged themselves.
And they've lived a lot of drugs. Life.
Don't do drugs, kids. Yeah, yeah.
They have lived a ton of life. A lot of hard living. And so, when we... Because Cameron and I even tested out another show called, like, Florida Shark Attack or something. And again, there was guys that were... They were swimming with sharks in cages. The Jackass guys do not believe in swimming with sharks with cages. They had Jasper from, like I said, if you know the Odd Future crew, he was floating on an inner tube behind a boat with pieces of tuna hooked to the inner tube, casually bobbing around while live sharks in the water were eating the tuna.
We're eating him, yanking him, and he's in this little tiny black inner tube being pulled by sharks that were swarming him.
And I'll say this, he was cool as a cucumber. He was cracking jokes.
He yelled at him, "Oh, I got credit carded," because the shark fin went right in between the cheeks that was poking down, because he was in a donut inner tube and his butt was hanging down, and a shark fin credit carded him. Swipe right in.
In my mind, I'm like, okay, did they somehow find a stretch of the Caribbean where these are domesticated sharks or something? Or are these guys really that crazy?
Dude, they were bull sharks. Bull sharks account for the most aggressive. They're the ones that bite the humans and kill the humans. Bull sharks. Well, lemon sharks hammerheads don't. Bull sharks are the ones.
Well, we got our answer to that question, how real this was, in the next scene.
This is true.
Where Poopsies, the new, it was the new guys who they subjected to the crazy Shark Week stuff. They had an idea for a stunt where, and this wasn't teased out the whole episode. No. It was just like one after the other. This was just another day.
Because like they do the old Jackass show. It's like they'll just do a stunt. It's a 5-minute segment and then they move on. That's what they were doing with Shark Week experiments. Each day was a different experiment. Tell them about this one. This one's crazy, Derek. This is insane. Like, imagine if you would do this.
So,
guys, this is...
No, but listen. Okay. Listen to what's about to happen. This is insane.
I'm waiting to convince me to watch this. No, this is nuts.
So they decide there's the famous idiom jumping the shark, which originates from an episode of Happy Days where Henry Winkler was water skiing, jumped over a shark on a lake over a ramp while wearing his like signature leather coat. Everyone points to it as like the moment the show just got too ridiculous. So they had an idea of, let's close the show by jumping the shark. So they pull out a little floatable ramp and there are sharks swimming around in the water. Poopsies or Poopies or whatever his name is wearing a Fonzie leather jacket and he's laughing it up. He is like water skiing behind a boat. They're going to pull him and a wakeboard. They're going to jump the ramp on the wakeboard. He's going to jump over the sharks and ride away. Well, he jumps over the ramp and he does not land it. He falls right in the water. And as he's sort of flailing around in the Fonzie leather coat, everyone's laughing. He is legit attacked by a shark. Like,
hospital.
I looked after, they underplayed it. He almost got his hand bit off. A shark almost bit his hand off of his arm on the show.
And at the end of the show, they show him and he had been in the hospital and he had this huge cast and like to reattach his hand. Yeah. He legit got attacked by a shark and the camera's got all the blood and everything. And he's like ambulanced away, you know, water rescue. It was crazy. And they didn't build up to it at all. It just happened.
It was exactly what we wanted. It was exactly what I've tuned into Shark Week.
It restored our faith in Shark Week.
All right. I have to ask y'all a question.
Yes.
It's going to be an obvious question.
Yeah.
Do you know if there's any life insurance or any insurance with the Jackass crew?
I can't imagine. I think they're waivers. Am I right? You can't sue the production.
It would have to be. Yeah. Gotcha.
Okay. And the next question, which was going to be the first question, but I figured to stop people from being offended, I'm going to ask the last question first. Was Poopsie white or black?
He was white.
Okay. All right.
He was white, but all right. Well, hey, I know where you're going, and Jesse and I had the same thought because at first, Jasper, who's black from Odd Future, was the one they were throwing in and that donut and you know all the danger stuff. And Cohen sits next to me.
Don't count. Odd Future. Well, so
Cohen's sitting next to me and going, "Dad, everybody on that boat is white. Why'd they put the black guy in the water?"
Odd Future don't count. We don't count Odd Future. Odd Future is they odd. That's the definition of Odd Future. So we don't count that. They're racially ambiguous as far as I'm concerned.
So there's this other show that we were watching, the Florida Shark Attack thing. Which I wanted
to
watch.
What do they count? Hold on. What do they count as, Derek?
Huh?
Clarify. What do they count as?
They are all races. They are all of us. They are all of us and none of us at the same time. if you ever watched Lord of the Squad, like them cats, they out here, man. Like they are gone. They, you know, matter of fact, I guess I'm gonna save this and let Emily bring this up, but they're odd. We'll just leave it there.
Don't do drugs, kids. Real quick, to wrap this up, we watched a few minutes of a show, the Florida Shark Attack show, because it was like legit, like, hey, number one, like, Florida is the shark attack capital of the world, right? And I live in Florida, obviously. And I wanted to see what they were talking about, because they were like, it was two guys, they were Australian, and they were going to go, they were going to come and run experiments around the different hot spots around the Florida coast, just to see what was prompting the shark attacks. Was it sound? Was it sight? Was it, you know, clarity, murky water, different things? It sounded like scientific. It wasn't scientific. What it ends up is, like, it was two Australian guys. One guy is like a shark enthusiast, and then this other guy who is clearly a surfer or something. And then, remember, the entire show is about shark attacks and humans getting attacked when they're out just surfing or swimming or whatever. And so this guy's talking, headshot, and he's Australian, and he looks like buff, like he's a surfer or whatever. And then they zoom out. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. He's missing an arm and a leg because a shark ate it. Okay? Whoa. So he's got a bionic arm and a leg. Whoa. Here's the thing. The entire thing, I'm thinking, I would never get on that boat. But he's not only on the boat. He's on the boat to find sharks and agitate sharks to get them into a frenzy state. I'm going, you've been attacked. You're missing two limbs. What are you doing? He got a full sweatsuit, fins, swimming. They go in the water, free diving, no cage, to try to agitate shark activity. And did they attracted bull sharks, lemon sharks, hammerheads, calling them to himself. He's missing an arm and a leg. And I'm like, number one, how do you get in? I said this to Jesse, just like rhetorically, how do you, if you're missing an arm and a leg from a shark attack, get in the water with sharks again? And Jesse, I go, how can you swim with sharks? And Jesse goes, in a circle.
I love it.
AT set me up.
I love it.
I was talking about emotionally, mentally, how can you do this? And he's like, well, how do you swim with one arm and one leg? You swim in a circle.
The same reason why you would join the cast of Jackass. You have 20 years of documented footage of bad things happening to people on that show, and you just like, hey, I'm on it. I'm with it.
It's crazy. Anyway, Shark Week. Sorry, kids.
They need to close out Shark Week with, like, Shark Week goes to therapy. And, like, everybody who's participated, especially the Jackass crew, they need to see a therapist. Because I think there's some deep questions.
It's amazing what people will do just to be on TV. You know what I mean? That's kind of the vibe I got from the Jackass stunts. Is like,
I got to be honest, though. The Florida shark attack guy who was missing the arm and leg, and we'd alternate between, like, the Winter Soldier arm and, like, a hook. You know?
He literally had a hook.
I felt like he was tempting fate at this point with these sharks. Like, obviously they have a taste for him. Okay, like, I don't know science of why sharks.
Wow.
It's like, you ever hang out with friends and like you're outside at a cookout or whatever, and it's like, some people are getting attacked by mosquitoes, some people aren't. You know, some people are just tasty to mosquitoes. This guy obviously
tasty to sharks
has an allure that I think it'd be wise for him to avoid the water.
And just, even how do you get back in after that tragedy happens to you? It's just crazy to me. Anyway.
Wow.
All right. Well, Shark Week, kids. All right. Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talked to Rainn Wilson. You know him from The Office. He's Dwight. He does Soul Pancake, a bunch of other stuff. He has a new book out. We talked to him. He has a new show out as well. You don't want to miss that. That's coming up later. We also have your feedback at the end of the show, but stay tuned. Right now, up next, it's Relevant Buzz. You're listening to Goth Babe. The song is Bioluminescence.
Where bold women thrive, Sweetbriar College empowers women to lead with purpose and integrity. Our 2,847-acre campus is more than beautiful. It's a place to grow in courage, character, and calling. With hands-on academics, a close-knit community, and spaces like vineyards, greenhouses, and equestrian arenas, Sweetbriar blends tradition with vision. Founded in 1901, we've always believed in the power of women to shape a better world, faithfully, fearlessly, and together. Find out more at sbc.edu.
Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
All right, tell us what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture this week, Emily.
No big deal.
Other than Shark Week.
Yeah, no big deal, but aliens are real, y'all. This isn't news to me. I've always known this, but a former intelligence officer spoke with a House Oversight Committee this week, and under oath, so he has to tell the truth, said the Pentagon has evidence of both UFOs and aliens. Of course, the Pentagon's denying this, but the truth is out there. Aliens are real.
Jesse,
there's a lot to unpack on this in this story, and Cameron and I actually talked about this over dinner last night for quite a bit. That
over our holiday meal,
yeah. I was talking
Jesse,
about the paranormal.
Can you pass the gravy? Like, hey, did you hear aliens are real?
No, but there's a lot to unpack. It was a two and a half hour congressional hearing with whistleblowers who were the reason this notable is because they were testifying under oath, under the threat of perjury, right? So, and they all have high level security clearances. Now, the one thing is a lot of if you pay close attention to some of these whistleblowers, a lot of it still is secondhand, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to like Emily, you were saying alien bodies or the bodies of what appear to be, mm-hmm. Some intelligent being that was piloting these craft. The whistleblowers don't actually have firsthand knowledge of that. They have secondhand. They've heard from kind of deeper levels within the government that we have these or have seen pictures, but not many of the whistleblowers or the whistleblowers don't claim to have actually seen them or interacted them with their own eyes. Just it was sort of knowledge within the program that they existed. So I think there is some degree of plausibility that it is alien life, but I also think some of the nuances of these congressional testimonies are noteworthy, considering that if this was like terrestrial, just super secret technology that's being developed behind the scenes, there is no smoking gun that it originates from off world, other than testimony that is still secondhand from whistleblowers. But either way, whether it's aliens, which it seems like. That's where a lot of the lawmakers are seemingly these congressional testimonies are suggesting that we need to be very open to the possibility that these are off-world, quote unquote, craft. Even if they turned out to be just highly advanced, craft. I mean, there was one pilot who testified that he saw a red cube the size of a football field emerge from the ocean. He almost hit it with his fighter jet, actually right off the coast of Cameron, 10 miles from where we are sitting right now. This is where this occurred, off the coast of Virginia Beach. Mm. A red cube emerged from the ocean the size of a football field. Their fighter jets almost hit it, and then it vanished, like it just took off into the sky. Whether that is alien technology or something terrestrial, it is absolutely mind-blowing testimony from a fighter jet pilot.
No one cares.
The most interesting part about this is I don't think a lot of people really care. Like this happened yesterday. The most mind-blowing congressional testimony of our life, maybe some of the most significant testimony of our lifetime, took place yesterday, and people are like, "Oh man, I don't know."
Shark Week.
Shark Week got pretty lame. Hey, what do you think about the Barbie movie? What was the real message? Is it about toxic femininity or toxic masculinity? What do you think she won the Oscar? I'm Just a Kid or Peaches from Mario Brothers? It's like
facts, bro. Boy,
no one
boy,
cares.
That Hunter Biden laptop. Is anyone sure what's that all about? Yes. I don't know. I keep hearing that. We have the most significant congressional testimony of a generation, and nobody cares. Like if an alien came out to testify in a suit, like a little gray alien came out, was like, "All right, here we go, guys. Here's the story. We crashed here, trying to figure out. Let's exchange some ships. Help us get out of here." Even then,
ET style.
I don't even know if it would lead a lot of news. Like, I think it'd be like, oh, and
there would be
earlier today.
Cardi B and Offset got into another fight today.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I think you see it trending. It's like Cardi B, Offset. You see some
Mitch McConnell's face froze during a press conference.
He was an alien.
Can we talk about how this man just literally just stopped?
or it's like some sort of like Twitter feature rebranding, and all the way down there is like Mr. Gray, and it's this exasperated alien in a suit, being like, "I've been trying to tell you guys,
how many farmers do I have to probe before you pay attention?" My favorite response was someone retweeted and it was like, "Well, are the aliens going to help me pay my bills?" And I was like, that really does kind of, like, we do have other things that are like, whether or not aliens are real, my right. life continues exactly. on. So, like, are they going to, or not? Well, I mean, then let me know if I don't need to plan for, like, make plans not. For next week. If they're going to the take aliens over, don't like, want let it me to. Know. Yeah. Just hit me up.
Yeah, I just think at this point, I know with myself where I'm at in life is I'm just like, look, what's going to happen, going to happen. So if the aliens is here, we got to deal with them. We got to deal with them. Like
the Bible says, be anxious for nothing. I mean, it's like we need to just say, I have that attitude. It's like God's in control.
I don't know if that's a healthy place for me. I'm saying for me, it's mm-hmm. it's not like, oh, I'm just confident in God. It's just like, bro, is it another thing? You know, we had riots, we had pandemics, we had
people are dying from heat.
People yeah. dying from heat. We've had inflation. We've had, you know, it's been crazy. So it's like, hey, yeah, of course, yeah, sure, yeah, aliens, they're here. They're gonna attack us. The people in Tennessee that have guns in their closets are gonna save us. We'll just leave it. But to
it's
them.
Like you ever you know like I mean? Take over like or you know. A house or whatever after somebody got evicted and they just trash it and it's whatever. If the aliens want to come now and take over Earth, we've trashed
you,
it.
You got
you can
it,
have it. You can have it.
Bro. Just, yeah. you know.
But the thing is, like, I don't even know if it's like to Emily, to you guys' point of like, well, it doesn't really, I don't think it's an unfair point, right? That it's like, it doesn't really affect my life like one way or the other. Because like a couple of weeks ago, everyone had their own hot take about that submarine, right? The submarine tragedy. You couldn't go anywhere and people would be like, man, you hear about the submarine? You know, like everyone had a vested interest in an opinion about it, right? This is so much bigger of a story. That was a tiny submarine going to visit the Titanic. It obviously had tragic occurrences, but I'm just saying, like, it was one of those anomalous pop culture stories that everyone that you could talk to anyone on the street. You could just ask them, hey, man, what's your thoughts? And they would tell you a very strong opinion. This is so much higher stakes and mm-hmm. nobody cares.
The crazy thing is, it matters. It does matter. Like,
yeah,
this stuff matters. But I think that we're all so like, there's nothing we can do about anything, that everyone's just like, look, I can only control what I can control. And
it's a very 2023 response. Yeah. Like, just, I was like, okay, another thing. But it's like, we do need to weigh, like, some of these things are very important and we should focus on, and aliens being real.
Who knew? Confirmed to be real. Who knew that the first Transformers movie was a documentary? I had no idea. That's all. I mean,
aliens knew.
All aliens down there in Project.
The All Spark. Yeah, but like, if you had to rank what people's awareness of like that cool sphere building in Vegas, the latest Cardi B fight. The submarine story, or you know,
like, Biden's laptop.
Yeah, Hunter Biden's laptop, or like the new Travis Scott Jordan's aliens. I think it would probably be about that order. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like in how much people care, but it just kind of is what it is.
You crazy. Know? All right, what else you have, Emily?
Speaking of unbelievably weird stories, Lana Del Rey has recently been spotted working at a Waffle House in Alabama.
Did y'all hear about this?
I did.
It's like not for a bit, as far as we know.
Bro. Like, so I don't, you know, it is what it is.
Customers just recognized her and her name tag said Lana, but she wasn't like trying to do it for publicity, but some random customers in Alabama spotted her.
She's not hiding. She hasn't really given a reason. Like, why? At first people were like, is she shooting a music video at a Waffle House in Alabama? But like, she's literally working, like she's taking orders, talking to customers, and everyone said she's been really nice. Like, she's taken photos with fans, signed some autographs. But it's just so funny because she dropped an album earlier this year that did fairly well. And she headlined a festival to like 60,000 people last month. Wait, so she's doing
You're saying that she's not doing it for the money. You're like...
Right, yeah. There's no reason for her to do this. Though.
Like, there's no way she comes from money. So
Derek, I as an artist, I thought of you. Like, I'm curious. Like, my perspective when I heard this was... She's the sort of artist that writes very vulnerable from experience. Like there's so much like heartbreak or this or that, whatever. Like even like there's lyrics of like, remember that summer that we went to that conference in Orlando, and like it just, it's from experience. And I'm sitting there thinking, she's become such a big star that her world is getting smaller, smaller, smaller. She's living in this little bubble in LA. I think she's probably going like, I want to go to this random location in Alabama and live a real life and slog through shifts at Waffle House just to almost get content, you know, like to have experiences, see people, see real life, real America that she wouldn't experience in LA. That's my take on it. She hasn't said either way, though, but it would make sense if she did that. She's that type of an artist to me.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I definitely could see that, especially if your whole life, like, she comes from money. So if your whole life, you've lived your life in money, it could be that. It could be a spiritual journey. It could be a journey of like, wait a second. I've lived in decadence my whole life. Like, I want to see what the rest of life looks like.
Right.
And I just don't want to do anything with music or be a, you know, debutante or whatever. I'm just going to just live life. So, I mean, hey, look. Listen, you got to be happy, you know? So, look, if you get abducted by aliens, at least you be at Waffle House, you get a nice all-star, you know what I'm saying? And you be straight.
She's only 2 hours from us, Derek, so we could make a little road trip down there and see her.
Here's the thing. Maybe it does. Derek, I like your idea. Maybe she's preparing for the aliens, because from the videos I've seen, I don't want to disparage Waffle House, but... If you work at a Waffle House, you got to be prepared to scrap every once in a while. If you can handle yourself at a Waffle House.
So she's going there to get ready for the alien apocalypse. She's learning hand-to-hand combat is what you're saying.
I'm telling you right now, you better have some hand-to-hand combat in the Waffle House. You don't have no hand-to-hand combat in the Waffle House, you're going to have a problem.
I will say, it looks like she's working a day shift, so it might not be as... I feel like night shift.
Oh, yeah, that's the 3 a.m. Waffle House that you got to watch out for.
It looks like she's... Light's still out. She's easing up to it. She'll get there.
3 a.m. Waffle House get you it'll together get you. Real quick.
That's true. Dude,
why isn't there... I guess we're kind of past that time of like trash reality shows, but I'm surprised there's not like a late night diner, you know, where it's just like, you don't know who's walking in the door. You don't know what you're in for. I'm surprised, like in the era of like Repo Men, where it was just cameramen following around, people repoing cars to see what kind of stuff they get into. I'm surprised we didn't have more of that late night diner stuff, you know?
We really should have, because that's like true American culture there.
Yeah, but that stuff's not going to go down if there's a camera crew sitting there. You know what I mean? Because that stuff comes out of like...
I think arguably it's more likely to go down.
We were talking about people will do anything to get on TV, so...
That's true. All right.
At the Waffle House, the truck stop, the drunk after the club...
We need to do diners, drive-ins, and dives after hours.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Waffle House, you cut the cameras on, it's going to turn into WWE.
That's just gonna fuel it.
All right, what else, Emily?
Last thing I want to talk about is super exciting. Every summer, Barack Obama drops a summer playlist of all the songs he's listened to, and he's always got like a very eclectic taste, so the place is pretty interesting. But this year, we were really excited because No Big Deal's Parabolic made the cut.
It was cool. It's like he didn't know, and you watch his like No Big Deal's like IG stuff, like he's like going, how did he literally said on his last post, like, how did President Obama even hear this song? You know, like, he didn't, this ain't faked. I mean, it's just like he literally just posted it and No Big Deal found out about it, which is incredible. So
this has been I think Wande was on it a year or two ago. Like, somebody programming that playlist of the Obamas, they tapped into some CHH for sure.
I want to ask, do we think Obama makes the playlist or does he get help?
Not at all. Obama
makes the playlist. I thought he said he did.
He says he did. I think Hasan Minhaj like straight up asked him. And he was like, I listened to it. But
he listened to it. You heard what he said? I listened to it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I think his team puts it together. He loves it, approves it, and then it goes out, you know, like, okay. And so then he knows that he can speak intelligently about it. But is he out there deep in this, in the playlist, like discovering new stuff? No, of course
Obama
not.
Obama is not on Spotify.
Exactly. I think his daughters are. So I could see them, especially with the younger music. I'm like, Malia and Sasha, his I believe y'all are listening.
Did not make that playlist.
I think Malia they and
Sasha did not make that playlist.
Nah, he's got,
That playlist got all kind of clean, nice stuff on there. They did not, they made, if they did, they made one for him. That's not Malia and Sasha playlist.
The dad version.
Malia was at Travis Scott concert, high as a mug, 3-4 years ago.
I remember.
She was absolutely not making that playlist.
At Lollapalooza.
Not the presidential playlist, for sure.
Yeah,
Jesse and I were at Lollapalooza a few years ago and she was there, like,
yeah,
with the security and stuff. But yeah,
Malia out here, I mean, she cool, she a young lady, she doing her thing, she kicking it. That playlist do not reflect young lady kicking it at Lollapalooza. I'm just letting y'all know.
That's true. Anyway, good job, no big deal, we're proud of him. It's really cool definitely. To get mentioned like that. In fact, if you haven't heard the song yet, I'm going to play it right now. Stay tuned. Up next, Rainn Wilson joins us. That'll do it for The Buzz.
Rappers don't revise. Cut the fat like some lipo. Shout to Post Malone. Kill the beat like a psycho. Indie tribe mitochondria. I'm in a cell. Intel like Melania. I'm doing well. Put my pennies in a safe. Not a wishing well. I can never mess with Snake like I'm Splinter Cell. Hit Carvello, told him send a pack at once. Right, one take Billy, I don't have to do a punch. Look, I just ate the beat, I don't have to take a lunch. You the captain of the captain, only captain like his crunch.
You're listening
to
No Big Deal. The song is Parabolic.
Well, today's episode is brought to you in part by Sanctuary Mental Health Ministries. Mental health and faith are big topics to cover, even more so when you're talking with teenagers. The Sanctuary Youth Series helps youth leaders, pastors, teachers, and parents break it down, covering topics like a theology of mental health, emotions, stigma, recovery, friendship, self-care, and more. The Sanctuary Youth Series is an 8-week resource designed for 11 to 15-year-olds. Help the next generation experience the church as a supportive space for mental health. Run the Sanctuary Youth Series today at sanctuarymentalhealth.org/relevant. Again, that's sanctuarymentalhealth.org/relevant. Are you a recent college grad or about to graduate from college and have no idea what's next? Check out the Global Ambassador Program, or GAP, with ELIC. GAP is a professional development program that will help you gain the tools you need for a lifetime of impact. Be immersed in the cultures of Thailand, Tunisia, or Uzbekistan for 9 months as you take language classes, grow in your faith, and serve the local community alongside a team of other Christian young professionals. And get this, ELIC recently opened applications for 2026. You could be on a plane next summer, impacting lives and reaching your fullest potential. To learn more about GAP and take the next step, go to elic.org/relevant. That's elic.org/relevant.
Our guest today is Rainn Wilson. You know him as Dwight Schrute from The Office. He's also the co-founder of Soul Pancake and recent author of Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution. He spoke with us about how connecting to our spirituality can help us mentally, emotionally, and globally. Here's our conversation with Rainn Wilson.
I'm really excited to speak with you about your book, Soul Boom, because it's all about why we need a spiritual revolution right now. And I'd really like to know what sparked the idea for this book.
Well, you know, it's one of the first questions I pose in the book, Soul Boom, is why the hell is the guy who played Dwight writing a book on spirituality? And, you know, there's a number of different reasons. One that I bring up is I was raised a member of the Baha'i faith, and Baha'is are very involved in deep spiritual conversations about a number of different topics and how spiritual tools can enrich our lives. Baha'is believe in the essential divinity of all of the world's religions, and so I grew up studying a lot of different faith traditions, and also I really felt like this topic is not just a side hobby of an unemployed actor. It's really, really important. Like, we need a spiritual revolution. things are falling apart, from our political climate to racism and sexism to income inequality to climate change. Young people more and more are feeling this anxiety, the mental health epidemic. And there are solutions to be found. There are salves to be found through spirituality and the tools of spirituality. And we're not discussing them. So, you know, we're talking a lot of, about positive psychology and how to be happier and how to be more grateful. That's great. Doesn't seem to be working very well or helping very much. And we talk about electing different political figures and politicians, and maybe that'll help if we pass some legislation. That doesn't really seem to be helping. So I'm kind of, this is a clarion call for us to kind of go back to the basics, to go back to, like, why are we here? Why are we alive? Why is there something instead of nothing at all in this universe? And how should we treat one another? Because these are essentially spiritual questions as much as they are philosophical ones.
I want to make sure that we're on the same page about what we mean about spirituality, because I think it can mean a different thing to a lot of different people. So what do you mean when you use the word spirituality?
There's a dictionary definition. I forget which dictionary it is, but it was paying attention to the spiritual and the non-material aspects of life. And it's really that simple. So for me, spirituality is about heart and soul. It's about feeling. It's about connection. It's about meaning. It's about transcendence. In contemporary kind of secular society, spirituality is kind of a very vague thing. It's a feeling you get after a yoga class, let's say. And for some, on the more Christian side of things, spirituality is only something to be understood vis-a-vis the Bible and church. And so I'm not talking about either of those things as well. I'm talking about the ancient human conversation of our eternal beings, the soul aspect of ourselves, and all that that entails. One aspect of spirituality that I think is very important are the divine virtues that we cultivate. Kindness and compassion and humility and honesty. These are not virtues that benefit us in any way. You don't go into the marketplace, or you don't go into agriculture, you don't become a hunter-gatherer with greater humility, you know, and greater compassion. Those things aren't going to help you get ahead, right? So why do all humans have these virtues? Some in larger capacities and some in smaller capacities, because they're aspects of the divine. And this is another idea that exists in the Vedas and Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita and the Dhammapadas of the Buddha and the Quran, in the Bible, the Talmud, and you know, the Old Testament, and in the Baha'i holy writings as well. And these are aspects of the self that are spiritual, that can be cultivated through work and through focus. But these questions can help us with, on an individual level, you know, thinking about like the mental health epidemic that's going on right now, it can give our lives a richness and meaning and focus. And it can also help us collectively as a species on the planet. So it's, again, like I said at the beginning, these are really important questions. They're not just a side hobby that makes an interesting conversation on a podcast or whatever.
You've spoken a lot about how Baha'i introduced you to a lot of different religions and spiritual beliefs as you were growing up. And I'm curious, how has having that spiritual background impacted your life and your view of the world?
So I've spoken about this a lot before, maybe even with Relevant back in the day, but I grew up a member of the Baha'i faith. I left it like so many people do in my 20s and early 30s. I left anything to do with religion hard. I turned my back on spirituality and morality and God and, you know, religious practice and building community through religion, you know, devotions, all of that. I just wanted to go be an actor in New York. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And I didn't want anything kind of holding me back. Well, that didn't work out so well. I got very depressed and anxious. I had very severe anxiety disorder. I was dabbling in addiction and drugs and alcohol, and I was really lost and unhappy. So ultimately, after reading the great religious holy texts of the world, including the Bible, I started reading the texts of the Baha'i faith, texts that I had not really perused as a youth and a teenager while I was in the faith. And I came back to my faith, and it has given my life a tremendous amount of meaning and focus and hope and love and perspective. So I just love what the Baha'is are doing around the world, the way that Baha'is are involved in service work and community building is really exciting. And the primal works of Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha and the Bab, the founders of the Baha'i faith, are incredibly inspirational and inspiring to me.
That's so interesting to hear more about your background and your story. And what sticks out to me is that in our society right now, there's so many studies that show we are both the least religious we've ever been, and we're also experiencing the most anxiety and arguably the most turmoil. And in a way, I feel like your life sort of mimics a lot of what American society is experiencing right now.
Yeah. So maybe collectively as a culture, we'll find our way back to some kind of spiritual path. And I think people are much more open to these ideas now than they were even like 5 or 6 years ago. As things continue to disintegrate, I think young people especially are more and more open to like, oh, maybe, wait a second. You know, we all jettisoned religion, right? Because there's been so much corruption involved in religion and so much shame and judgment and crimes committed and perpetrated by religion. We've jettisoned it. We're like, ugh. But like I say in my book, maybe we've thrown the spiritual baby out with the religious bathwater. And maybe there is some truth to be found in the holy texts and some kind of sense of transcendent purpose for us human beings on this planet that can actually practically make our lives better and make the world better. Because if it doesn't do that, then we should jettison it. But if spirituality or religion or some combination of the two, because those are two kind of separate things, if they do make our lives better, and if they do make the world better, then we should focus on that and work toward that. And if they don't, then we really should find something else. I have no idea what that would be.
What is a good first step toward creating a spiritual revolution in our own personal lives?
Well, I in my book, I talk about 7 pillars of a spiritual revolution at the end of the book. And there's many ones that are really practical. One is to not give up hope, to remain joyful, to spread joy, to spread positivity, and work for change. Because if we're cynical and pessimistic, then nothing gets done. And the forces of chaos and confusion, of materialism, and of hopelessness and despair, they win. If we stay pessimistic and cynical, they win. And it's really easy to get pessimistic and cynical. Just read the newspaper and be like, ah, what a bunch of crap. This sucks. We'll never get out of this. Nothing will ever change. It's really, I find myself falling into that position a great deal. So I say fostering joy and squashing cynicism. That's a great place to start. You could do that on a daily basis. You could make a decision. Not only am I going to attempt to feel joy, or connect with joy, I'm going to spread joy. I'm going to give joy to someone else as a service. And believe it or not, when you do that, when you give joy to someone else, you actually feel, you get like a 10% dividend on the joy that you give to someone else, maybe 5% dividend. It actually makes you feel more joyful. And when that voice comes up of like, nothing will ever change, this sucks, we're humans are just buttholes, we'll never get any better, we've got to squash that impulse and recognize it for what it is and say, you know, that's not going to lead to anything good to just to dwell in that. So feel it, acknowledge it. Oh, there's that cynical, pessimistic voice again, and let that go and then focus on joy.
That was Rainn Wilson. You can order Soul Boom now. All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback. You're listening to Odessa, Yellow House, and Preston. The song is Waiting Forever.
What if you could change a child's life with just $10? Right now, thousands of vulnerable children in East Africa are suffering from jiggers. It's a painful, preventable parasite that burrows into their feet. Soul Hope is the only organization treating it through foot washing, medical care, and durable closed-toed shoes that protect kids long after treatment. $10 may not seem like much in today's world, but when we come together, those small gifts add up to big change. Join the 10 for 10 campaign. $10 protects 10 small toes. Visit soulhope.org/10 to give now. One small gift makes a big difference. Again, that's soulhope, S-O-L-E, hope.org/T-E-N. Today's show is brought to you in part by the new documentary, Buying Her. Why is sex trafficking a multi-billion dollar industry? Sex buyers. To end trafficking, we need to put them in the spotlight. The documentary Buying Her, created by the organization Exodus Cry, is a first-of-its-kind film exposing the truth about sex buyers. It captures the unfiltered stories of men revealing how they became predatory consumers and the booming sex trade, and how some of them found redemption. Buying Her strikes at the very heart of sex trafficking, and it's available to watch now for free at buyingher.com.
All right, it's time for your feedback. Last week, we got talking about the Barbenheimer double feature that so many people did, where they saw Oppenheimer and Barbie on the same day. And it got us thinking about weird pairings of movies that we would want to see happen in the theater. So we asked you, what would be your dream weird double feature movie theater experience? You hit us up on Twitter/X. I don't know what to call it anymore. At Relevant Podcast. And you told us here's some of our favorites.
Hack Attack. They just came out and just said the names here. A Walk to Remember the Titans.
Yo.
The Life of Pi, Ritz of the Caribbean. Again, two aquatic theme movies there. The Wolf of Wall-E.
Ooh.
Night's Tale and Dark Knight is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Nice Tale and Dark Knight is crazy. Shout out to Jeremy Friedel.
You got
to
throw in 10 Things I Hate About You, though. Like, just make it a little Heath Ledger marathon.
Right.
I like that everybody's theming it. So, like Tim Quigg said, his double feature would be sequels. So, Paddington 2 and then John Wick 2.
I like it.
I like, yeah. John Bees. He said he actually did this one.
Oh, my gosh. This is crazy.
A double feature of A Muppet's Christmas Carol and Spike Lee's Malcolm X. Yo,
he says he saw them in that order in 1992. And he's like, he says, I didn't feel good about my day when that was over.
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, two movies that it's like, why would you watch those back to back? But I appreciate it.
That's wild.
Did he just have time to kill the theater that day?
Yeah, I think he just wanted it. He went into Muppet Christmas Carol and was like, hey, I'm just going to sneak into another one that's about to start. I think that's...
And listen, that fateful afternoon has been living rent-free in his head since 1992. Literally. He's like, guys, I'm so glad someone asked me. I think about it all the time. The day I saw Muppet's Christmas Carol and Spike Lee's Malcolm X in the same afternoon. Someone's finally asking me about it.
All right. Well, there's a lot more where that came from. You guys had some great suggestions. All right. It's time for this week's
editorial question of the week.
All right. Well, earlier in the show, we were talking about the alien testimony that the little gray man said, hey, I'm here, everybody. No. That a government official said on the record that the government has in possession alien crafts and beings. And it got completely unnoticed in the news cycle. Mitch McConnell's Nobody face cared. Got more coverage than aliens being real, which is unreal to me. Anyway, it got us thinking, we want to know from you, what's a story that you heard or saw in the last few years that you're shocked that more people didn't care about? Like, how is anybody not talking about this? A story that you came across. So hit us up on Twitter hit us up on X, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Threads. I don't know, at Relevant Podcast, at Relevant Magazine, and tell us stories that you think should have gotten far more attention than they did in the last few years. And we'll shine the spotlight on them. Can I give you an example? Please do.
Hollywood legend Dick Van Dyke.
I love him. He's one of my heroes.
Was making rounds doing interviews, and I don't know why more people don't still talk about this. A few years ago, he fell asleep on a surfboard. And when he woke up, he literally said the land was out of sight. Okay, that's how far
he drifted. He's 99 years old. When was this?
I think he was 92.
He was 92 on a surfboard?
And he fell asleep, which is not surprising. Yeah, you know, he's an older guy taking a little siesta on the surfboard. He wakes up on the surfboard. Land is out of sight. This is not, we all think about
national
how close.
Treasure, Dick Van Dyke.
And people would have been like, Dick Van Dyke vanished. Like, that, like he literally floated away, never to be seen again. This is what he said, okay? There's no reason to doubt him. Dick Van Dyke has never done anything to make us doubt his credibility, right? Okay? The man was in Mary Poppins. He said he woke up, land was out of sight. You have to be miles. I think it's 3 miles is line of sight in the ocean. He was 3 miles out. This is, I'm going to read.
3 miles is the international border. Like he could have been gambling out there. He was in international waters.
Dick Van Dyke drifted out to international waters on a paddleboard and was preparing to die. This is the quote from the interview. I started seeing fins swimming around me and thought, I'm dead. They turned out to be porpoises and they pushed me all the way back to shore. He said, I am not kidding. That actually happened. A pod of porpoises miles out into the ocean found TV legend Dick Van Dyke bobbing in international waters.
America's dad, and Dick Van Dyke.
A pod of dolphins pushed him all the way to shore.
Hey.
How are more people still not talking about
also,
that?
Also, not coincidentally, that day is the first day Dick Van Dyke tried mushrooms on the shore of the beach.
I'm just saying.
And the magical dolphin pod maybe didn't push him all the way back to shore.
How do people not bring that up at least once a month? Like, oh man, I never remember when Dick Van Dyke got
floated. Dude, that's dinner party fodder right there. Like,
that's what I'm saying. But why do a story like that? This should be the biggest story in the world. One, Dick Van Dyke missing at sea. No one knows where he is.
International waters.
He floated. Dick Van Dyke has floated away. Printed all over the world. He's resurfaced, and a pod of dolphins pushed him in.
I love it.
In my mind, the dolphins like recognized him, and they're like, "We got to get this man back to shore. Like, this is the world's father.
National
we need
treasure.
To get here."
My goodness, that is crazy. Anyway,
Dick
hit us up on
Dick Van Dyke was high as hell.
That's what I'm thinking too. It's like, I don't know.
Look, I gotta be honest. If there's top five people who would tell that story, and I'm just gonna probably believe them, I think Dick Van Dyke's on that list of top five.
I believe facts.
I believe that 92-year-old Dick Van Dyke did not drift to international waters and get pushed back by a magical pod of porpoises.
That'll add up, Jesse. I'm sorry.
Listen, why at the age of 92 is he making this up? He has nothing. He has nothing to gain from this.
You know what old people do? They take drugs for pain relief and different things.
How dare you?
I'm just saying. I'm not disparaging, and I'm not libeling him. I'm not saying that he takes drugs. I'm just saying, it would be a plausible explanation, more plausible than a magical pod of porpoises saving him as he drifts out of the
nothing to gain, everything to lose.
Look, man, Old people do drugs too, bro. Like, we just gotta let it be.
He's got 90.
Willie Nelson been doing weed for longer than I've been living, bro. Like,
so. Dude, the man has 90 years of credibility.
99. Okay? He's 99 now.
And he could have been doing drugs all 99 years, bro, for real. We don't know.
We don't know.
If
his representatives are listening to this, please do not sue us. We're not saying he's a drug addict.
I'm saying contrary.
I'm just saying, if this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Dick Van Dyke is a drug addict. I'm just saying, if I'm 90 years old and I tell y'all that I drifted out to sea.
International waters.
And some dolphins pushed me back to shore.
I'm a paddleboard.
Listen, y'all, I'm high as hell. I'm telling y'all right now, I'm high as hell. I'm letting y'all know right now, bro. I'm giving y'all, I'm high. Like, just letting y'all know. I'm saying, I would be high as hell.
What happens when you sleep? You dream. If he fell asleep on the paddleboard, he dreamt that those dolphins pushed him back to shore, and he woke up as the waves had pushed him in.
If it was me, just Derek, take y'all go drug test Derek ASAP. If it's me, drug test Derek ASAP.
His pupils are the size of golf balls.
Derek gone.
Again, he seems like one of the least likely persons in the world to trip and do. But we've been doing the show a long time. If you were to give me $1 million to say Derek's going to qualify something he says in this show with a phrase, and I had to guess it, and I got 1 million guesses, I would not have guessed that it would be, I'm not saying Dick Van Dyke is a drug addict, but...
keep me out of all lawsuits, no nothing. Listen, Dick Van Dyke, he America's dad. Yeah. We on a podcast, but I'm saying if me, Derek Minor, right. If I'm in that position and I tell you that story, get the drug test. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to ask people, this is well documented. Again, it kind of flew under the radar, but it's out there. You can go look it up and people make their own determination.
All right. All right, well, that'll do it for your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter. If you know, tell us the stories that you feel are been underreported that the world should be talking about or paying more attention to. And we'll read our favorites on next week's show.
Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Rainn Wilson for joining us. Make sure to check out his new book, Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution Now. Also, a few updates. If you haven't checked out the summer issue of Relevant yet, you should. We have a ton of incredible conversations and content. Our cover story is with Lauren Daigle about her amazing new album. We also talked to Arizona, Drew Holcomb, Naomi Raine, and so many other amazing artists, leaders, and thinkers. You can get the issue for free by clicking the magazine tab at relevantmagazine.com. If you want to get the beautifully designed enhanced digital edition, you can as part of Relevant Plus. Relevant Plus gives you a ad-free experience with our content. So you get unlimited ad-free reading at relevantmagazine.com. You get an ad-free version of this podcast, an exclusive subscriber podcast, and more. Plans start as low as $2.50 a month. You can find out all the information by clicking the Relevant Plus tab at the website. Also, make sure to stay connected with what we're publishing every day. We cover the intersection of faith, life, justice, and culture like no one else. You can get our top 5 trending stories into your inbox every weekday morning by signing up for our newsletter right there at the website, or follow us on the socials. We're posting all day, every day over on Twitter/X, Threads, Facebook, Instagram, and you know, just wherever. Just follow us. There you go. All right. On that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Minor.
I'm Emily Brown.
We'll see you on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
We bailed on the special without one breach.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.